Some companies don't want to hire somebody because they've not stayed longer in a particular place, and it's not necessarily the length of stay. If somebody is supposed to head a partnership department, the person stayed for about 4 months in a particular company, and they're able to bring about 5 international partners, 2 local partners, probably got grants worth thousands of US dollars and those and the likes. In terms of impact in those 4 months, it was very impactful. So for me as a recruiter, my question will now be, if you've done all these good things for them, why did you leave? And it's very, very good to understand their reasons, Percy. So for me, as a supervisor and also as an employer as well, I had to ensure that I had an open door policy. In fact, my policy was so open that there were cases of employees from other departments coming to come and talk to me to let me know the challenges they were facing and if I could help them approach management. So one of the major things I promises I made was, if I were to have my own company or to hire people, I would be firm as a leader, but let it be that there's an open door policy if there are challenges. And I found out that some of the reasons people want to leave, salary is a major factor. But I've actually found out that some people might not necessarily look at the salary, especially if some things have been put in place.
Hi everyone, welcome to Modern Workplace Conversations, where we explore critical and often under-discussed topics within the professional world. Every week, we feature experts ranging from HR professionals to operators to lawyers and CEOs to provide you with diverse perspectives on workplace issues, trends, and best practices. I'm Oluwanifemi Kolawole, Senior Editor, Checkpoint Africa. Joining me today is Charles Awunsheyin, a veterinary doctor turned founder who focuses on helping talent boost their careers through resume and LinkedIn optimization. We discussed the unconventional approaches to employee retention from his experiences as an employee and now as an employer of labor. Charles explains what companies get wrong with managing multi-generational workforces and how employer brand plays a huge role in employee retention. Let's get into the conversation.
All right. Thank you very much, Charles, for agreeing to this. And I think we can just get into the conversation directly. But before we do that, I would like you to talk a bit about yourself and why you are in the best position to discuss what we are here to discuss today.
Okay. Thank you very much. My name is Dr. Charles Awunsheyin. I'd like to describe myself as a founder and a management consultant. I didn't really start this way. I had my way in the veterinary medicine profession, even down to my master's. I assumed I wanted to lecture. And then naturally, I like to get as much knowledge as I could, and I like teaching people. Okay, then I assumed maybe the classroom was the best place to be able to teach people. But somehow after my master's program, I got opportunities to work in the corporate space. I got my first job in the agri-tech sector, an agricultural technology company. I worked there for about 5 years, and I think a lot of the things I know now, I learned in there, because we started from just 3 people, myself, a customer service rep, and the CEO in 2018. And after the time I left in 2023, we had as much as 60 staff. And then over 80 staff had passed through the company. Yeah, so I had a lot of JDs when I joined in. I was almost everything. I was good in a lot of things. So I could say I've hired as much as 100 people in my career. I did as much as 500. Gone through thousands of CVs, and I've worked with lots of recruitment companies. I've understood a lot of the internal processes. So personally for me, I've experienced a lot. I've worked in about 4 or 5 workplaces, and most of the places I end up, I work directly with the CEOs, and it gives me a management perspective to talk about talent management, talent recruitment, and the like. So I could say I have very much experience. So most of what I'll share in this video will be from my personal experience and what I've learned as well. Thank you.
Amazing. That's amazing. Yes, interacting with people that many is something you can put in the bag, like, because it's not easy to handle people, to hire them, keep them, make them to be comfortable staying or working with you.
So from my personal experience, I started working in a very small team. Okay, so that meant I'll meet with the CEO, I will go a plan of the people who want to hire or recruit, and then I go in, prepare the JDs, like I was basically in charge of all the processes because I was the only person. I vet these candidates, probably select the top 5, do the virtual interviews, select the top 3 or top 2, do the physical interviews, okay? So they get to talk to me on the phone, they get to talk to me physically during the interview. I send them the offer letters. When they come in, I'm the person that hired them, I'm the person that trains them for like a week or 2 before I hand them over to their respective departments. So I would say they are lucky because every single process from getting to know them to bringing them into the company and making them comfortable was on my desk. Okay. And it was something that worked a lot well for us. So anything you needed, just go to Charles. Charles, I don't understand this. Charles, who should I report to? How should I do this? And it was like one person had the power to do everything. But in a few years, when we started expanding, we had multiple departments, multiple departmental heads. And then we had the special and dedicated human resource channel, human resource departments. And that was where we started to see a lot of lags. So a HOD meets with the management and says, these are the gaps in my department. We need ABC. Okay. And then there is usually, and this is not from experience, but from what I've observed, there is this gap between the management, the human resource department, and the specific teams that people are being hired into. So the team is saying they want someone to do this specific thing. But the HR is saying we cannot hire just one person to do this thing. So the job description that is being put out and probably what the teams actually need themselves might not be the same thing. And most times, there are lots of HRs that don't want supervisors to undermine their processes. So it's more like, just tell me what you want and go and sit down. Okay, I will do the JD, go through the entire process, hire the candidates, train them myself. And then by the time you see that you're submitting this candidate to the department, most times, you find out that there's a gap. The supervisor is like, this is not what we need, or we might have needed this kind of skill set for this position, but you had to hire this person. Imagine when you need someone that can do something, you want an implementer, and the HR is bringing a strategist because the person has experience. But the person comes in and feels that that work is too small for someone at his level. Okay? Or maybe you feel you want someone that's teachable for that role because it's a role that needs a lot of oversight. And then you hire a more senior candidate that feels that the supervisor is probably on the same level with him or is probably older than him. And those other things. So I think that roundtable discussion of saying the management, the human resource department, and the team that the person is going to be hired into, I think they need to sit together and agree to come up with what is the ideal JD. It has to be a particular thing. You will not want a situation whereby the HR says, don't tell me my work. I know what I need. I can do it. I've been doing this for 15 years. And the supervisor is just waiting for you to bring in anybody to him and then and all those other things. And the candidate comes in, okay, maybe not even knowing what's happening, and then they meet this back and forth, and then they meet the supervisor, it's not going too well. By the time they go back to the HR, it looks like there's a big miscommunication. So I think that's a major factor. For each JD that goes out there, we should assume that everybody's on the same plate, everybody's on the same table. But when people don't work together to design that, and also I think the place I work, one of the major things we did was to make sure the human resource personnel was in the interview, probably a representative of the CEO or the most senior management staff was going to be there, and the head of department or the direct supervisor of that department that the person is hiring to had to be there. So why it helped us was that while the management is asking for the generic company-based questions, the human resource person is looking at the cultural fit, and then the supervising manager is looking at the specific fit for the particular role. So I think that is something that worked for us. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Charles. You successfully helped us to understand how much effort should go into attracting talent, bringing them in. Now, putting that much effort now, going all the way to involve management, involve HR, involve specific team heads, to bring somebody in, and then in 1 month, in 2 months, you can't keep them. Why do companies do that? Is it the same errors that go into not properly bringing out the right people that also goes into not being able to keep this talent in the company?
Okay, yes, and thank you for that. So to the best of my knowledge, attracting the candidates to your company or even onboarding them and keeping them at three different ball games. One of the things is that, so you do your best and every other thing, and let's assume you get the most ideal candidate or the best candidates to the company and to the role. So my point is going to be, it's going to diverge a bit from, there might be bigger companies, there might be smaller companies. A company of about 50 to 20 people, a startup, and a company that has about 500 or 600 staff, they have similarities, they have differences. But for most companies around us, most of them actually, there are lots of startups in Nigeria. So one of the major things I discovered was that you get the best candidates for the role, probably a programmer or someone with IT experience, the person knows what to do. Okay, you can take that person and put him in any company, in any situation, as long as that is the role he's supposed to do. Let me say it's coding or programming. The person is the best programmer. Coding is his job. But now, this person is not probably working remotely. You are bringing the person into the company to work with other people. And then you need to understand some of the peculiarities. One of the major things we found out was that storytelling is a major factor. Okay? People want to know that why they are doing this work. A lot of people want to know why they are doing it. And in my former place of work, we found out that a lot of people come in and either they meet supervisors that don't have the same dream as the CEO. Let me say, the CEO said this is the problem I'm solving, and the supervisor has something entirely different. So you could see after a month or 2 months, the person is doing the work well, but the person feels like, why am I here? I mean, what problem am I solving? How does it make a difference? So one major thing I got to note is the onboarding process. In two ways, we made sure that the supervisors or the team we are bringing the person into should have had documented processes, a full onboarding. So there's a space over somebody's hand holding the person to teach the person some things, and then there are well-laid documentation available. Another important thing is, in terms of storytelling, we ensure that within the first 1 week or 2 weeks of working, each new hire had a one-on-one with the CEO or the most senior management staff, and they had a one-on-one with their supervisor. It's not necessarily about jumping on the job. It's about understanding why this company is different from the place you've worked before. Okay, I'd worked in a for-profit company, and I moved to a not-for-profit company. See, the not-for-profit company, the experience, their pace of work was a bit different from the for-profit company. Okay, so that's one-on-one with the CEO to understand the story. How did this company start? When did it start? How many years ago? What are the achievements we've gotten, and why are we here today? Each candidate needs to hear that, and then each candidate also needs to hear from their supervisors why we decided to hire you. What problem or what gap did we see in the process that felt somebody like you could expect us fitting? So that person now has his work, but with a purpose. You know that when he's programming, for example, if he's programming a tool or maybe an app that used to help pregnant women or help farmers in the community, he needs to understand. Okay, so that's going to help him generate the different context. That way, it's not just a machine that's delivering results. He has feedback. He could say, okay, based on what you said and based on my experience, this is how we should do this thing. So I think that's usually where the cultural fit also comes in, because most times the human resource person is mainly the custodian of the culture per se. So also having to fit in with who are those you are going to be working with. If you get a 30-year-old female, for example, and she's to supervise probably 32 or 33-year-old males, or she's to supervise people that are 20 years old and people that are 40 years old in both ends, the person needs to understand this context. So that is where a lot of all these things come in.
Yes, thank you for elaborating on that. So thing is, it's as if I've totally put the fault of employee retention on the employers from the question I've been asking. So let's just clear it. Is it always only the employers or the company that are responsible for any lapses in employee retention, for instance? Or employees also have a role to play when it comes to employee retention?
Okay, so I would say it goes both ways. And then there is this common norm in Nigeria, what was ordered versus what was delivered. Okay, so most times on LinkedIn or most of the general social media, you see a lot of, it's supposed that it's employers, because you see a lot of candidates going online to complain about a particular role or a particular interview or some of the unusual things they saw. But if you should make it a level, and most employers will not want to do that, because to an extent, it's like they are bad-mouthing their brand, if I use that word. So most of them just want to be on the safe side. But I followed a lot of human resource managers on LinkedIn, and some of them venture out to give some generic information about probably how they maybe seemingly hired the wrong candidate or other stuff like that. So I think it goes both ways. Sometimes it could go beyond for the employer part. Let me say one major thing I've noticed is in terms of complicated hiring processes. Okay, I've had someone apply for a job in June. Okay, they are done with the probably the first stage of interview at the ending of June. In July, you have another interview. In August, you have another interview. And in September, you don't even know whether you are qualified or not. And somehow, mid-September, another job gives you an offer. And then this, for some weird reason.
Is it the best thing hiring for a CEO level? Why is the process
so long? I've seen entry-level position that are taken as much as 2 or 3 months. So a lot of people complain that the moment you got this job, then the next 2 or 3 days, a job that I applied for months ago, they are now sending an offer letter. So, you know, when stuff like that happens, you've even forgotten a lot of those things. So sometimes that's overcomplicated, lengthy processes works a lot. And then I've also seen cases whereby, and this is talking about the employer side, employers need a particular role and they don't go online and they get a generic job description. Okay, it's not very specific. And then you hire this candidate, and in the first 1 or 2 months, they're telling the person, do this, do this, do this. And the candidate goes to check his job description, and he has not even done 40% of what is in the JD, but you're telling something different. Sometimes you can see maybe they are hiring an admin level staff or a HR staff or a management staff, and the person somehow turns into a PA, picking focus and all those other things. So I think when it comes to the employers, naturally there are lots of stories out there. Employers have a major role to play. But when it not comes to the employee side, there is this common norm going around in the terms of hiring Gen Zs, and there is the Gen Z experience. If you get all the managers or supervisors or HR to come to talk about it, there are lots of stories, you know, people that probably once it's 5 o'clock on the dot, they are leaving. If you shout at them or you scold them or you give them a query, they are resigning and all those other things. So when I said what was other versus what was expected, some employers put out a particular JD and say, this is what we have to offer. They tell you, this is how our company is. But when you come in, you find out that from your day one, it's a lie. Okay, I found someone that has been hired for a senior manager role or a supervisor role or a head of department role. And when you come in, you find out that there's nobody in the department. You are the alpha and the omega. You do everything, okay? And they know that if they tell you that during the course of the interview, you might not take the job. So they keep that side apart. So when that person comes in, the person naturally starts asking, feeling and burnt out, starts asking for probably an increase in salary. And it looks like the person is being unreasonable. And also when it comes to the employees ourselves, for example, you see cases whereby people go and pay someone else to write their CVs, and they pretend or they assume they can do a lot of things, and it's not that way. Okay, so you say, I can do this and this and that. And these people hire you based on the fact that, okay, and then probably the most people that are sweet talkers, okay, somebody gives them a JD and a CV, and they internalize everything. They come to an interview and they dazzle everyone, and people are happy, you know, chopping uncle that we got the best candidate. And then day one, the person cannot do the work, and you're asking, is it that the light on your CV? So I think people are very desperate to get jobs. I mean, the economic situation in Nigeria is that bad. People are desperate to get jobs. And if employers are not careful and they are not very observant, they can actually filter out the right candidates and get in the wrong candidates that can actually sell themselves better. And then there's a mismatch in the role and the candidates as well. And I think in terms of attitude and personality, there are lots of attitudinal issues in terms of the employees as well. A 20-year-old today working for a 40-year-old and the 35-year-old working for a 40-year-old, or if somebody's manager is probably a millennial or an older generational gap, those are major factors. Personally for me, I've had to work with them. At the point I led about, I think, a team of about 16, and in my team, I think I was 30 as at then. In my team, I had 18-year-olds working for me, and in my team, I had 40-year-olds working for me, and they were all reporting to me. And for some weird reason, a lot of departments, a lot of supervisors struggled with this in terms of, I'm feeling disrespected, I'm talking to me anyhow. But for some reason, people kept asking, Charles, how did you manage these people so well? So I think personally, for me, I took a lot of courses in talent retention and talent management. When the senior citizen, if I use that word, let me say the person that's probably 10 years older than me does something, and when the 18-year-old person does something, I treat them differently. Okay, because I have to assume into that position. So, to a large extent, some of these senior people come to me and like, Charles, I know I didn't do this so well, but I like the way you handle it. I'll make sure, because of the trust you have in me, I'm not going to do this again, and I'll check in with you once in a while. So that respect came up. And the junior person said, you know this better than me. You could have shouted at me or scolded me in public or made it a huge case, but you identified the error and you told me the best way to go about that. So one aspect is probably guidance. Another aspect is probably letting them observe that, okay, I place so much trust in you and this is not supposed to happen. So I think that communication line, I took the course and some of those courses really helped me. So it's happy to be able to manage people a lot. So for me, there were hardly cases of you disrespected me or you talked to me in a way I did not like. Funny enough, most people in other places I've worked have said that if I should start my own company or if I should go elsewhere and there's a vacancy there and they have to work under me, then they'll be willing to come and work. So I think, personally for me, as a supervisor, I've had to employ people as well, and I've had to work for other people. I think I have to work on my own attitude as well, and I have to learn. People can manage a business, but managing people is a very, very big factor. And for every supervisor that does not know how to manage people, it's going to be a challenge. For employees, people that have worked remotely, and people that are probably moving from working remotely to working in the office, as an individual, there are lots of things you have to adjust and learn in terms of accountability, and you know, respect and all those other things. I think for your question, it covers both ways. Everybody have an equal role to play.
Thank you very much, Charles, for the examples you gave. They are very important, and it points out something that to be a people manager is not something you just feel like I've internalized it. Sometimes, even though you've worked with a lot of people before, you still have to go and learn how to manage a multi-generational workforce, for instance. So it speaks to the fact that managers, employers, they have to like learn more because the workspace is evolving. Now, I think before I go to my next question, one thing just occurred to me, and I want to ask if there is a metric you use to measure the rate or the success rate of employee retention. How long should an employee stay in the workplace for the employer to be satisfied enough that this person actually stayed long? We are not experiencing a high churn rate, for instance. How do you know that you're doing a good job with employee retention?
Okay, so from experience as well, I have had people that have sent in. Okay, when I started, I've had people in my exact team that have sent in resignation letters. Okay. And while everybody was reacting to say, how dare you, or you are disrespectful, or whatever, or let us let him go, or whatever, I get to talk to them. Sometimes I've had maybe after work, maybe a phone call in the evening, on the weekend, or if they are physically available, I could just say, okay, are you available? Let's just go somewhere to just eat and talk. And then they get to open up most times, and you get to find out that some of the reasons they are leaving, it could be that there were no exact processes whereby they could air their grievances or talk about some of the challenges. In one of my former places of work, we decided to open an office in Lagos. We were based in Ibadan then. And we had two employees that had never lived in Lagos before. But because it fitted their JD, we had to send them to Lagos. Okay? And they were in Lagos for about 2 months. It was very challenging, but for some reason, that position in Lagos was very needed. We did not have the flexibility to assume we could probably hire a Lagosian or someone based in Lagos to just move them all over. So they were at it for about a month or so, and it couldn't fit in. And they did not want to probably make the company look bad by saying that they wanted to come back to Ibadan. So they sent in the resignation letters. I've had multiple cases of people resigning up front, and then you get to talk. And the moment you find out that problem can be easily solved, okay, it could be a case of maybe a girl that wants to get married and her husband is in another state, and she's not even aware that there's a remote work policy, and she has a very, very crucial role. It could be a state of someone that wants to go and run his master's and all those other things. There are various scenarios available, but I think in the context of how long they should stay, it depends. I usually focus more on the quality of work. I would tell my people that have worked with me or people I'm working with that I want it to be that if something happens and for some reason you have to leave, let it be that I'm leaving in good time. Let it be that if somebody chats me up a month or 2 months or 1 year later and say, can you recommend or refer this person? I'm going to beat my chest and say yes. Although he or she did not stay with us for long, for the little time that they stayed, we had that much impact. So looking at employee retention, I personally, it depends. Most times, I'm not the kind of person that wants to get a slavery contract where you want to get someone that the person must work for at least 2 or 3 years or whatever. Okay, I mean, the normal job, the normal period, the notice period is usually 2 weeks to 1 month for most people. But in my place of work, I've seen employees that would have resigned in their first 3 or their first 6 months, and they ended up staying for 4 years or 5 years because they had an open door policy. It did not have the HR department that made it look like if you wanted to come to complain, then they were going to put your name on the board and say this person is a saboteur, or this person is not the person, and everybody will look at it. They had to keep things a lot. And I think personally for the companies I've worked, growing for us was instrumental because we had a lot of the team members involved in the process. So like I said earlier, you get a programmer, his work is to run programs or do code and the likes. You give him an office, a desk and a laptop, and he decides to work. And then after 1 month or so, something comes up and he says he's resigning. If we should sit down to have a favorable discussion with him, I mean, and when you're talking about discussion, it should not be something that should be open. That trust level has to be there. They want to know that if they tell you what their challenges are, you don't want to go back and tell the person that this person said you did this or whatever. There should be better ways to control that. There have been cases of people leaving because of harassment, either sexual harassment or even insults and the like from their supervisors. So that would tell me as an employer that my supervisors need to be trained, or there was a mismatch in this particular person. For example, sometimes some supervisors are promoted, not necessarily because they are better people managers, but because they achieved a particular metric, a particular result, or they stayed in the company long enough. It's more like you're rewarding them for length of stay. And once somebody is not, it's just like saying you get a copper that that doesn't know how to teach, and you take the person to a primary school to go and teach. And the person is not aware that children of 5 years or 10 years, they understand differently from a university student. So the person says, what's 2 plus 2? And the person says 5, and then you get go all out. Yeah, so that context is very, very important. So in the length of stay, I would say there's no specific, most people say at least, not, it should be up to a year in a particular role. People that usually live less than 1 year, sometimes it usually underscores them on their CVs. But most other people say that it is the reason why you left. Okay, if for example, you had a surgery or there was a health issue and you had to leave, you might not be able to put those things exactly on your CV. But if you have to get to an interview, people want to ask you. I would prefer to have candidates whereby they could give me a justifiable reason as to why they left. Imagine if somebody was being sexually harassed in the office and she had to leave and she stayed for 2 or 3 months. But because I saw 3 months in a particular role, I think she's not a good candidate. Even if, or despite the fact that everything on her CV has shown me that she's the best. Some companies don't want to hire somebody because they've not stayed longer in a particular place. And it's not necessarily the length of stay. If somebody is supposed to head a partnership department, the person stayed for about 4 months in a particular company, and they were able to bring about 5 international partners, 2 local partners, probably got grants worth thousands of US dollars and those and the likes. In terms of impact in those 4 months, it was very impactful. So for me as a recruiter, my question would now be, if you've done all these good things for them, why did you leave? And it's very, very good to understand their reasons first. So for me, I as a supervisor and also as an employer as well, I had to ensure that I had an open door policy. In fact, my policy was so open that there were cases of employees from other departments for me to come and talk to me, okay, to let me know the challenges they were facing and if I could help them approach management. So one of the major things I promised I made was, if I were to have my own company or to hire people, I'll make that policy so open. I'll be firm as a leader, but let it be that there's an open door policy if there are challenges. And I found out that some of the reasons people want to leave, like you said, salary is a major factor. But I've actually found out that some people might not necessarily look at the salary, especially if some things have been put in place. For example, a candidate once told me that he had to relocate from Port Harcourt to Ibadan to come and work with us. And he had worked for about 3 months, he made his probation ended. He had to take a loan to get a house close to the office. So to me, that was a huge commitment. But his supervisor was not aware. Okay, so some things could come up and you make it look like you can discard that person easily. So when you get to talk with some of your staff and they're willing to open up to you, somebody could say that maybe his parents relocated or something happened to you and all those other things, and you can vet them. So for me, those reasons are very, very important. That's why sometimes in most management meetings, when I talk about staff, people usually ask, Charles, what do you have that people just feel, people just find it a lot easy to open up to you? Some supervisors could say, they've never told me about this, I never had an idea. I'll be the employee that will say, this person's mother had a surgery, and that's why he was acting this way last week. This person lost whatever and the like. So I think that opened up policy. If not with the direct supervisors, then the human resource department should have a process that way. That would be a lot of resignations can be really, really avoided. And on a final note, I've had members of my team that had to relocate outside the country. But guess what? They themselves offered an option to the company that I'm relocating to the US, I'm relocating to the UK, and I'm going to stop. For example, it's an agricultural company, for example, and the person is in charge of agricultural partnerships. And the person tells the company that despite the fact that I'm resigning, if I can continue working remotely, I can relocate for my master's in agricultural economics in the UK, and I get professors, partners, and potential partners in the UK, tell them about our company in Nigeria, okay? And if it works, we can actually start exploring international partnerships. A lot of people have this mindset, but when you make it look like the moment they say they're resigning, then you're the devil, you put an X on their name and put it on the board, that they don't want to offer that. And tomorrow you come online and I see them announcing on LinkedIn that they're working for probably your competitor in the same town or in the same state, and they see you located and things are going on well. So I think for me, that open door policy actually helps me to identify, but focus more on the value of the length of stay than just in the length of stay.
You see, I love that you went that route, because the conventional way of probably measuring employee retention would be looking at the number of years they stayed with you. But now you came at it from the aspect of what was the value they rendered while they were there, even if it was 3 months they used, it is still a metrics you can add to it that this person, I did a good job in retaining this person. They had to leave for so reasons. I like the way you approach that, that question. And then you mentioned something while you were talking about how salary might be a good way to retain a person, but it's not necessarily all there is to keeping a person in a company. I'm sure you've mentioned some of the employee retention approaches while you were speaking for the past few minutes. So I don't know if you can bring them all together and just mention list a few things that a company can do to retain good talent. Well, apart from salary, you can still mention salary, but I'm sure it is more than that.
Yeah. So, you know, when you hear the term competitive salary, I mean, a lot of JDs have competitive salary. And then the context is based on what? Now, competitive salary as at February this year, and competitive salary as at now, fuel price in Nigeria has gone up almost time. I mean, to a very, very huge margin. So if you apply for a job in February and they offer you, let me say, 500,000 naira, and then the job is giving you the offer as at now, the difference has changed. In Nigeria, for example, minimum wage moved from 30,000 naira to 70,000 naira. And although it was not what people wanted, they wanted more, but they clapped. And in less than a few weeks, fuel price almost doubled. Okay, so it looks like we went from frying pan to fire. So they gave you more money, but they doubled how much that money could actually buy. So, yeah, competitive salary. Most times when people say competitive salary and I'm at interviews, I would like to ask to be, for them to be very, very specific. Okay. Now, in terms of what people need a lot of things, and it's also important at the stage of their lives. In my place of work, my former place of work, we started working, we hired people right from when they finished service. Sometimes some of our interns were in their final year in school. So we hired most entry-level staff because we're a startup. The first year, second year, third year, fourth year. By the time we started getting experienced hires, people that were in their early 30s or so, in less than a year or two, they started getting ready for some of the ladies, they were getting ready to be married. For some of the men, they were getting ready to be married. And then I got to understand as a supervisor that the needs of maybe a 55-year-old man that is single and the needs of a 31-year-old man that's about to marry, they are very different. But the 35-year-old man is thinking about probably himself, his house, accommodation, and all those things. The married man is now thinking of, okay, if 400,000 was okay for me, now I'm bringing a woman in, and it's possible that in less than a year, you could start expecting a family. So for some unusual reason, HMO was not a concern. We were not even doing HMO at some point in time. And for some unusual reason, HMO suddenly became a concern. And we saw that, most of the people clamoring for that were probably men that were married, or they found out that their wives were pregnant, or women that were married and the like. So I would say competitive salary, salaries are important. The value of the salary is also important as well. And the relatability of the salary to the current norm, per se. Back then, when you're paying people 100K for a particular role, you could also pay the same people 200K for the role, and the 200K might be small. And then also, let me say another option is going to be in terms of work-life balance. I've had friends that were earning 400,000, but they were living at Berger, and they're working in Lekki, so they're taking commute daily. And then they've had offers of 250,000 fully remote. Okay. And then, so naturally, if you want to focus on salary, everybody will tell you that 400,000 normally is bigger than, it's 150,000 bigger than 250,000. But the person should sit down and calculate how much it's going to cost taking a ride from this place to this place. They're looking at the typical Lagos, they're looking at about 3 to 4 hours lost in traffic, depending on a good day or bad day. So it's not just the quality, but the person that assumed or calculated about 100,000 naira in commute, the person will look at the stress, the person will look at probably when you get to the office, you have to get food to eat and all those other stuff and the likes. So I've seen a lot of individuals focus more on the other benefits, not necessarily the full salaries. Other benefits could be in terms of flexibility. Most people willingly want to take a hybrid role than take a full-time role these days. So they want to probably say 3 days at home, 2 days in the office. But if there are some offers that are looking at just every time in the office, morning, afternoon, day in, day out, that could be a challenge. If you even say that people have to work weekends, some companies, of course, they need their staff to work weekends, but why not even offering additional compensation? Okay, that'd be a major challenge. And I usually advise that companies or human resource personnel discuss all these things upfront in terms of pension, in terms of tax, payment of tax, in terms of HMO, in terms of additional benefits, you know, probably 13 months holiday allowances, leave. I mean, I've known people that have not gone on leave for a whole year. And if you want to mention leave, they say they include your salary and how much they add, 10,000 naira or 20,000 naira. Okay, so I think that flexibility is a major option that people can also offer as well. Then in terms of professional development, I once attended a session, I think it was a human resource section, whereby this lady said she worked for an international company in a remote role. And at a point in time, their Indian office complained that because of the heat, okay, I mean, I think it was the heat season or something, it was so hot, and focusing on work was difficult. It was an international company. And guess what? The management sat out and they found out all the countries in the equatorial region or whatever, but it cut across most countries in Western Africa. And all the employees there, they gave them, I think, allowance of $500 yearly. About half of that should go towards probably getting an AC or a fan or something that will make work a bit convenient for them. And then the other half went to professional development. Okay, so for some of these people, whether the salary is higher or lower, most of these additional benefits come in place. It can be very, very important as well. Also, I think in terms of looking at a clear career path, I spoke to somebody yesterday and she wanted to break into the human resource space. Okay, so if she were to get a role at this stage, that might not necessarily pay her all the money she wants, but it's an entry-level role in HR, she will willingly take it, because as far as she's concerned, that is her career path. But when you tell her that you're going to pay her more, and you're going to put her in a customer service role or in an administration role that she does not want, that's going to be mismanagement. Okay, a lot of people in Nigeria, the truth is that a lot of us in Nigeria apply for roles based on survivor mentality. Let us get our legs in. The moment we get our legs in, we now realize that this is not the best, this was not the best option for me, and then we start making demands. And when the demands come, it looks like you're being disrespectful, or you're not being satisfied enough. And like, so personally, if I were to be in an interview, I would not like to look at flexibility, number one. In terms of balance of the world of work and life, that means, for example, does work end by 5 and that is 5, or you could send me a message by 7 to send something to you by 9 o'clock. Those are the things I want to know. Am I weekends free, or does it mean that on a Sunday on my way to church, you can call me and tell me that I should get ready for a Zoom meeting with a client in the US and all those things? It's not as if they are bad, but it's actually important that people get to know beforehand. Okay, so the lead, and then I usually expect that once you've had those discussions in interviews, it's important that they're in the offer letters. Then also the additional benefits. For example, if you tell your staff that no matter whatever they do, they're getting data allowance, okay, or they're getting this allowance and all those allowances. So most times in my former places, we've had low budgets for recruiting staff. Okay, we've not paid competitive salary in some cases. In fact, if they're probably paying 250 for this particular role, in our industry, we'll be paying probably 150. But the point is that we're not happy, like I said, increase the value or the package of that staff, that by the time the person sits down and calculates them on a basic level, that 150,000 naira plus the other advantages and the packages will beat another person that's collected 250,000 naira cash, and that is all. So most times I say, okay, but you tell your staff that this is your offer, let the staff know the additional benefits. Okay, do you have a HMO plan for the staff? How much does the HMO cover? If you have a HMO that even covers third party or maybe the family members, maybe one or two family members, HMO that covers surgery, do you have transport allowances? Some offices have allowances for lunch breaks and other sort of things. Do you offer maybe like, let me see, 18 or 20 days a year for leave, 18 or 20 days a year for professional development? If the person is taking a course in Lagos business and the person needs to take 2 or 3 days off, are those things available? So when you're able to communicate these things effectively, I think it actually helps in getting the right client, talent to stay. So they might not necessarily be focused on how much they take home. But I've seen most people that are working in places whereby they don't pay them so well, but the packages are so generous and so beneficial that they want to stay.
I think something else that you also mentioned in passing is the work culture of the place. It's one of the things that keep people in a place for a long time. I've been at my current workplace now the fifth year, over the fifth year, and one of the things I tell people when they ask me why I'm still here is definitely the work culture, right? So it is not always about the pay or even the full package of benefits, just the work culture, working with leaders that actually understands the struggle of being an employee or working in the tech space, and that is very important. I want to ask what role does the employer brand place in keeping a talent in the workplace. So I reason that if I'm working at a place and every other market, there's always a scandal or there's something making the news about where I work, I think it's going to tell on my own brand. So I probably not stay long in that place. So that's just an example. So what role do you feel like an employer brand plays in retaining a talent?
Okay, thank you. So interestingly enough, when you mention brands, people naturally just go to social media, you know, marketing. You know, maybe something like this advertisement you see on TV. But it goes beyond that. One tip most employers don't know is that, and thank you that you asked a lot of questions about employee retention, is that the way some employees leave, whether it was their fault or not their fault, somebody could go to Naira Land and say something bad about you. And when most employers think of brands, they think of newspapers, they think of Instagram and Facebook and all those things. That is where the good parts are. But sometimes, some people, especially myself, if I'm searching for a job or a company probably sent me an invitation for an interview or I'm applying, just go online and just search the name of the company. Probably go to Google. I mean, of course, because of SEO, the first page is showing, you know, the social media page, the newspaper mentions and all those other things. The second page, maybe a few other things, but you see the fourth page, when somebody angrily comes online and says something on Ireland, or somebody says something on Facebook or any social media platform, and they like, look at that place, it's a nasty place, maybe the boss is not a nice person, or they will lie to you and all those things. A lot of those information are there. So when it comes to brand, in my former place of work, we had to train somebody in our social media department to help us to be, but the person's work was to sniff on all social media to just see what people are saying about our brand. If a customer comes on and I say, maybe I paid them and they did not send me my money back and all those things, we have to tackle it immediately. And if resolved, we will appeal to the client to either go and delete their initial comments or they should go and post an update below it. So when it comes to branding, it's not just about putting the fine pictures and all those things there. Some of these other things go on the side. When it comes to branding, the point is just, what is the perception of people, okay, when they think about your brand? So in terms of the role of the employer, I'll probably mention, I'll say it in terms of the team, the culture, the workplace itself, achievements, and then websites or socials. In terms of the team, and this is an experiment we tried, it got to a point people will be like, I've not heard about the company. We were doing a lot, but we're not communicating it effectively. Okay, there were some expos, some international fairs, some networking events that we were not even attending. So what did we do? We registered and we started attending a lot. When we attended, we wear our employee uniform, our company colors, get to our car, probably get some souvenirs. So people started associating us with the brand. And we had a young workforce. We wanted people to get to know that we have a young, vibrant, and lively workforce. So what did we do? When we attended these events, we sent the young people there. So imagine you're looking at a networking event and we're having all those senior guys with their suits and everything. You're having people that are probably between 20 to 30 years old, two or three or four of them, very young people. They're well dressed in company's color, they're speaking eloquently. There's no question you ask them about the company that they cannot answer. That is a good way of showing out your brand. Okay, so people want to have that context that, okay, this are the kind of people that work here. Okay, the next question I usually get asked during those sessions is like, oh, I have a sister in NYSC. Can she come and do internship with you? Can she come and volunteer with you? Why? Because they've seen what it is that they like. Another thing we noted was that, most social media pages usually carry products. If you are selling laptops, if you are selling some devices, you know, buy one, get one. Just like looking at Jumia, for example, buy one, get one for another. It's so product focused, but there's no idea of who are the people. So imagine you have a picture that shows, yeah, this is Femi. Femi is the lady behind Tech Points, this article. She has done 13 so far. We spoke to this person and this person and this person. The moment people can put your face to this brand, and then they now start putting, okay, apart from Femi, this is this person. So they can now look at, oh, this is just like me. Oh, she studied the banking and finance, or she took a course, she's doing this one. It's very, very easy to relate with. That's where employees can showcase. So for us, we used to have what we call the last Friday of the month. We had what we call happy hour. Okay, you know, we contribute money. Yeah, a lot of people do that. Thank you. So in the beginning, we were doing that, but it was making the staff happy, but it was not enough. So what did we do? When I started putting our happy hours on social media, I had my siblings and my friends, they were like, Charles, I want to come and work for you guys. I'll come on Friday alone and eat. You know, we're having fun and all those things. We worked so hard, we'll put that out there. So people started telling us during the, and then, you know, like I said, I was always in all the interviews. So when I get to ask them that question, what do you know about our brand? instead of mentioning, you know, you're an agricultural company, you sell products, they mentioned those parts, but they mentioned the fact that they saw our social media, they saw how young we were, they saw how vibrant we were, you know, we watch movies, we do this and that, and the places they are working, they don't do those kind of things. So in terms of the team, I think people like to know who are the people that make up the team. Okay, if I'm working in a company, if I want to work in a company and that company has international partners, the company has probably even corporate advisors in the international space and all those things on the company's website, people can choose to work with for a company because of the kind of people that are working there. And the only way they can know is when those kind of people are well listed on social media. Culture is also an important aspect as well. And then the workplace itself. So I've had a friend that had worked in an office that was not too fine. Yeah, visually, it was not visually appealing. Just one ugly table, ugly chair, according to what he said later. And you know, when he came online and he saw, you know, nice conference room, yellow lights and all those other things. We had, in fact, there was a time we did a virtual tour of the office. Okay, we got an ideal staff coming in as a guest, and then we took a camera pulling the person around. And the person said, "This is the reception, this is the workspace, this is the CEO's office, this is our room for lunch, our coffee room, these are the bathrooms and toilets here." We had a small place for ladies that had kids to keep the, like a mini nursery in the office then. This is our conference room. Once somebody goes online and they see that kind of stuff, it's very, very appealing. If you are familiar with Microsoft and Google, they do a lot of those stuff. So when you go to their social media pages, you see employees playing table tennis at work. You get to see employees playing PS4 at work. You see employees, probably there is even a mini bed where employees can rest. And you can see this is what our staff do when they are burning out and all those other things. So you can say that even without mentioning the salary and all those things, people that are coming from places that are not up to that, you say, "Oh, if it's what it means, okay, let me come and work here." So I think in terms of the workplace, you know, I mentioned website, we need to have our best suit found in the website. Then finally, in terms of achievements, I really want to ask my doing interviews, what are the top 5 achievements? Personally, for me, when I'm interviewing people and there's a bit of time, even if I'm not going to select the candidate, I sell the company. Because I've had people reach out to me even now to say, "Charles, the things you told me during that interview, even though I was not selected, thank you a lot. I took your advice. I changed my CV. I did this and I got a new job. Or where are you working now? How can I volunteer? How can I be part of you?" So I see interviews as a two-way process. The candidate, and then unfortunately in Nigeria, make it look like we're doing employees a favor, candidates a favor. You know, tell me why you should come and work for me. Why should I consider it? But no, it's a two-way thing. Okay, so I spent a lot of time selling the company to candidates. Why? Because goodwill is very important. I want it to be that tomorrow when you see another job advertisement, you might not qualify for it, but it'll be like, "Oh, because of the kind of people there, my brother or my sister or whoever, come and apply." So the top 5 achievements, very important. I usually want to ask employers if they are not telling me, what are the top 5 achievements? Do you get a national award? Were you awarded maybe the most employee-friendly workplace? Within a space of, for example, I told you, remember when I started, I said we were three members of staff when I started, but in the space of how many years, we moved from 3 people to 60 people. I forgot to mention that we're even willing to expand about 2 or 3 countries and the like. So when you tell this story of growth, it's a lot easier. You could say, "Oh, we've grown for 5 years," but by the time you mention our CEO started this company in 2018, and then in the space of 5 years, we now have 200 staff, we have 5 offices, we have this, we won this award, we've handled 5 million orders, we've made $200 billion, you know, dollars in revenue and all those things. These are also achievements that can ensure that the employees put their brand out there. These things should be on the website, these things should be on the social media pages, and doing interviews, especially for quality hires, these things should be communicated. So I think some of these are very important. If employees put this in place, then for some reason, even if your salary might not be up to par, people are willing to work. And so when you're seeing a job advertisement out and you see 1,000 people apply, they're not applying because of survival. They're applying because of the fact that they feel this is the place they want to be. And when these things, when they hear these things, they come in and they see these things, then they want to stay longer. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Charles. You know, when I was thinking of this topic and I felt like, okay, conventional and unconventional, I had some things at the back of my mind. But most of the things you've mentioned are things that companies would ordinarily not pay attention to. Who would have thought that putting your company out there, making it fun to look at, is something that can keep a person in a company? Who would have thought that happy hour could keep a person in a company, for instance? You get. So these are some of the things that employers sometimes overlook and they don't pay attention to. So while we round up this conversation, are there other conventional, like common ways you can keep your employees to stay with you that people have now overlooked? And are there like more unconventional things that companies don't do or don't pay attention to that can actually retain, keep employees with them?
Okay, wow. Good question. There are lots of them. Another thing I do is I run a mentorship program for employees and employers alike. Yes. And like you said, I focus on the unconventional, those kind of things that YouTube or social media will not tell you, but they work. I had one with them, a wellness company in Abuja recently. And I asked them a question. I asked one of the employees, I was talking about unique selling points. I asked one of the employees, what makes you special? Okay. And she was beating around the bush, she was not too sure. And then I asked her boss, her employer, what makes her special? And he spent as much as 3 minutes talking about her, how she's soft-spoken, how a lot of customers have told him that they are going to come back again because of her. You get how she's very, any information you need, she gives it up, and she was shocked. And I told him that if care is not taken, because she's collecting her salary at the end of the month, when she gets a job that's probably paying her 20,000 or 30,000 naira more, she will want to leave. And she might go to a place that's not going to respect her this way. So it's very important for employers should let employees know what change they're making, what impact they're making in the company. Okay. In a former place I've worked as well, a boss of mine had told me that he's naturally shy, he's withdrawn. He wants to work with his laptop alone. He's not necessarily good with people. Okay. That's his own. He's good with programs, he can think and strategize, but when it comes to people, it's a big challenge for him. And he told me that, Charles, I've observed you. Okay. You are good with people. So this is a part I'm not good at, but this is where I'm good at. Let us work together as a team. So that meant doing interviews, he ensured that I had to be there. If it was time for maybe someone to travel out or go to another place to represent the company anywhere, he preferred that I should be there because he focused on my strengths and because he let me know that this is a major difference I'm making for him. It helped me improve on it. So that's what we call, open. So normally when they're having employee appraisers, everybody's scared of appraisers because it's like that is the time your supervisor, let me use the Nigerian point, like I will catch you at the end of the month or at the end of the quarter. That is when supervisors are now set up. I told you this and this, and that is not how it should go. Appraisers should be both ways, but normally for us in my places of work, it's more like a conversation. It's like getting feedback. Okay. For example, somebody did something so amazing and then there was no applause or no kudos. In fact, we once did a survey in my former place of work and we found out that people preferred public applause or public celebration than even giving them money or giving them money. I mean, the money part is also good. But the point that somebody does something great for the company and you don't tell the person well done via DM or WhatsApp and that is all. You know, that Monday morning stand-up meeting, we see 200 million naira in a single deal and call her out, he celebrates her, put her as the employee of the month. Those little things make a huge impact. Because tomorrow, when she's going for a master's program or when she's getting another job, she wants to be able to take that link on social media and send it to an employer and say, this is what I did for this other place. So this is the kind of person you want to have. And there's what to call, I call it reverse mentoring. Because it's funny, and yeah, I think I left, I forget. Another thing I told the spark people I was talking about was, they should ensure that kind of exchange happens. The CEO or the supervisor should let their staff know what difference they're making. It's very important. It's good to encourage them to do more. In fact, by the time I discover that my staff is good at this, I can even recommend a course for him or he or her to take to improve them on that. Okay. Then also, we usually have what we call our roundtable sessions every quarter. We get everybody on a roundtable and we discuss. And my former boss was the one to do that. He called these 3 things. We look at the last quarter. What did we do so well? We want to identify them and everybody should be aware of what we did so well. And they will ask ourselves, what went wrong? What did we not do so well? Maybe we did not hire enough people, we did not make enough money and all those other things. It's an open table. Anybody can talk. There's no supervisor, no boss or subordinate. And then the next question is now, going forward to the next quarter, how can we improve? Let's hire more people. It could even be that maybe the fan in the office is not getting around or there's no AC in the office. I've seen a situation by that whereby just during the hot season, just introducing 1 or 2 AC units in the main working space improved work productivity. People decided to work a lot better. Then I think a team member of mine also introduced what we call the embodied system. So when we started the graduate trainee program, and then we had to introduce in the body BUDDY. So we had to introduce for each volunteer or each intern or each graduate trainee that came in, we attach the person to a senior professional. The point was that the person was supposed to be there for about 3 or 6 months, but it's more like teach he or her everything they need to know before they leave. So in case you needed to ask any questions, you go directly to that person. So that reverse mentoring actually helps. Why? We have what we call succession planning. Succession planning doesn't come by magic. If myself, I get into a job and I want to be promoted in the next 2 years, and I'm the only person in the department, I need to be able to set up a process whereby in the next 6 months, there are now gaps that will need to be filled. They need to hire people. And when they start hiring those people, I will move from that person that knew how to do the work to the person that now leads the people that know how to do the work. So that means I'm moving from implementation to strategy and leadership. Okay? So that is where reverse mentoring comes in. I remember that as you now have maybe 2 or 3 people in the company that are reporting to you, in the next 1 or 2 years, if you are still going to be there, maybe promoted to a more senior role, and then you need them to be able to see like a transfer of knowledge. So that reverse mentoring, of course, I've talked before that I've led teams of 18-year-olds and I've led teams of 40-year-olds. And I got to understand some of the peculiarities. The 40-year-old guys had worked in a lot of industries. They had vast experience. There was nothing that was surprising to them. You hardly present a scenario or a challenge to them that they've not experienced before. But they had a gap. The gap was that in terms of adoption of IT skills, technology, it was a big challenge to them. The moment Slack came up, people are like, we are still talking about WhatsApp, Slack is coming up. And they're talking about Asana, Kanban, ClickUp, and all these other tools. It was a big challenge. And whether they like it or not, now we're talking about PowerPoint before, now we're talking about Canva, another presentation tool. So it was like, there were so much tools coming up that it's very, very special for the older citizens to be able to catch up on. But guess what? The younger guys are very, very good at those parts. The younger guys are good at technology. You introduce something to them, and that's over the weekend, they post one YouTube video, they've downloaded it, and they're using it for. But when it comes to experience, they don't have that experience. Small thing happens in the office, and all of them are shocked, and they're having high BP, or what's happening. And the other person is saying, oh, it has happened before. Do this, do this, do this, do this. So whether we like it or not, I call it, instead of calling mentoring, I call it reverse mentoring. It goes both ways. So you're using your experience to guide the younger people to say, okay, if this happens this way, this is what you should do, this is what you should do. And then for the younger people, when the company says, okay, from now I'm introducing Zoom, introducing all these other Zoho and the likes, and the person is like, oh, what's the meaning of Zoho? It could just mean a weekend or maybe 1 or 2 or 3 hours after work. The person sits you down and takes you through that. So one of the things, this helped my team to be able to offer, to be able to go through almost anything. I made sure that reverse mentoring stage, of course, very important. Then I also think in terms of offering loans, micro loans, for example, Nigeria is in a bad economic situation. So we had the policy whereby staff would collect as much as 3 times their salaries after their probationary period. But the loan had to be specific and you had to show evidence. So if you needed to pay rent, you have to get the invoice from your landlord to the office, send it to the admin department, and they vet it. And when they give you the loan, you have to make payment and send the receipt of whatever you paid for. So you have to put that accountability system in place, and then we have to structure a repayment plan. So because we made it a lot easier, so if you have staff that are coming in, even though we did not have express amount to provide accommodation, you have staff that came in, and when we tell them of this offer, they're like, oh, perfect. Okay, so I think there are many other options. I think another aspect we noted was for most of our staff that had additional talent. So let's assume you are working at TechPoint. Let me say you are the social media manager, for example. Or let me even say you're the admin manager. You work on all those admin stuff. But someone did discover that maybe you are good at arranging events in church, or you're good at interviewing people. And then at this stage of our company, we need to start interviewing. So this is your special skill or a special gig. We can start having sub-projects within your process that can actually help you bring out your special skill you need. Myself, for example, I love speaking in public, but my job for the first 2 or 3 years was to sit at the office. So one of us got to know that in church or outside, I was very, very good at these things. He said, okay, Charles, we'll start attending some events and I would like you to speak. So next time he gets an invite to come and speak, he's like, I'm not available, send Charles. And all of a sudden, it helped me push me. In fact, what I'm currently doing now is because he did that back then. Okay. So I feel the job place is not just to come and deliver only on your KPI and go. There should be like a way to be able to improve on different other areas. And I think on the final note, that opened up policy to get to talk to employees is very, very important, because if I were to talk to a staff, a female staff, and she tells me that her relationship is going further, for example, and she might be getting married soon, her general worry might not be if she's in Lagos and her husband is in Bayelsa, for example. And all things being equal, she might be thinking of relocating. That is a major factor in her head. so that if she's going to send a resignation tomorrow, that will be a reason for resigning. Or if a man says he's going to get married or his wife is not pregnant, he's thinking of HMO, he's thinking of antenatal, he's thinking of prostitute bills and the likes. Okay, so for me as a supervisor, when I understand those things, I can now go ahead to discuss with management to see if we can even offer a unique plan for this person for this particular phase of time. You know, men are talking about they don't have paternity leave, you know, they're always going to work and their kids are grown up, so, and there are so many issues. So personally, for me, I feel when that door is open, it's there for people. And I think this is not popular, but I feel this is what HR departments should be doing also. If not always hire and dash out people, and then at the end of the month, you do appraisals and sack or fire and all those other things. That opens the policy whereby people have issues and they come to you to talk to you one-on-one. That is why you're the human resource personnel. So you're on the side of the company, you're on the side of the individuals. That means the CEO should know if people are not happy at the workplace. If people are requesting for salary increase for some other reason, if people are requesting for this and that, and the like, I think it's very important. Because most CEOs are kind of put in a ball. They are there and they don't even know whatever's happening in the company. And just a little knowledge about one or two of these scandals, it's just policies that are made by human beings. Someone could just mention this, okay, let's approve this and it starts going. So I think there are many unconventional ways, but for me, the reverse mentoring option, the open door policy, the talent improvement aspect of work, and microloans as well as some of the major ways that can actually help most of the unconventional ways that can help people retain most of their key staff.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you very much, Charles, for doing this and giving so much insight. I'm sure anybody that listens to this, even as an employee, will know what their company is supposed to do to retain them, and also employers will know, as managers likewise. Before we leave, I remember you mentioned at some point that you do mentorship. Are there other services you render that you might want to let our audience, our listeners, to?
Oh yeah, thanks. So like I said before, I always wanted to lecture, but at the end of the day, life did not put me in the lecture room. It put me in public. Yeah, so interviews like this, I'm open to always sharing my ideas to people. A lot of things have worked for me, and then also make sure I'm passing that message across. Then I also have a team that we optimize LinkedIn profiles. So when I say I'm a founder, I have an outfit that started. We optimize LinkedIn profiles for professionals to get to give them guidance. For example, how did I get to know you? I was following your company for years, and I was following some of the articles, and then I went to LinkedIn and I said, okay, let me even get to know who are these guys behind TechPoint. And then I filtered through and I saw some names and I sent a name to you, and then you checked my profile and I like, oh, this person meets the needs I have at this particular point. Those are some of the strategies to teach us to how people can stand out, to get speaking engagements, get job opportunities and the likes. You also help people to reform CVs as well. But my mentorship is focused on employers and brand advisory, you know, to advise employers and brands on how to get the best out of their business processes, especially on the people side. Then also teach employees or staff on how to position themselves better for promotions at work or for better opportunities as well. So let me say, generally, LinkedIn and CV optimization and brand advisory, and to a large extent, mentorship and public speaking. Those are the major things I offer.
Yeah, thank you very much. And our listeners, I'll put a contact to how to reach Charles in the description notes. You can check that out. Thank you very much, Charles, for joining me on this conversation. I am looking forward to other opportunities for us to have other discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. You can catch up with other workplace related conversation at techpoint.africa/subject/work. All relevant links will be included in the show notes. Don't forget to send in your comments and recommendation to mwc@techpoint.africa. Catch you in the next one.